What's up, Fandom Night? Episode 33, Catching Up with the Marvel Shows.
What's up, everybody? It's your old pal Cesario Level here. I might sound a little weird, but that's because I'm doing a bit of a new sound setup. Like, I'm just holding my phone. But that's because I'm sitting here on my laptop, since I got a brand new laptop, and I'm looking at my Netflix list, and I'm like, oh shit, that's right, a new show starts on Friday. And since the new show will be out on Friday, I figured I'll give this a chance to catch anybody up who's missed anything so far. Because the new show coming out on Friday is Iron Fist. So I'm going to go ahead, let Bill drop the contact info, and then I'll try to tell you guys what I can remember from the shows. Because it's been almost a year since I've watched several of them. I mean, Luke Cage was like the newest one out, and I marathoned the entire thing over the course of like 2 days. But, I mean, that's to be expected. I was at work, and then, you know, what was it? I want to say it came out on, like, a Tuesday or a Monday or some such shit. So I sat down and, like, tried to marathon it over the course of 2 days with my work schedule. So about 13 episodes in, like, 2 days sounds about right because it's an hour an episode. Anyway, regardless, like I said, I'm going to let Bill go ahead and do the contact info, and then I'm going to get into this, and seeing as how it's sitting right here in front of me, it'll give me a chance to actually sit down and kind of discuss what happened in each episode. So if there's any breaks or in between, that's what's going on. But regardless, give me one moment. I'll be right back.
Hey guys, I know you're about to get your podcast on, so I'll be quick. If at any time you feel like dropping your own opinion into what we're talking about, head on over to FandomNight.com and all of the contact information for every single one of our shows, including the one you're about to watch, is there. Alright guys, I'll leave you alone.
Alright, now that the contact info has been dropped, and by the way, just to let everybody who doesn't know, we've basically set it up on YouTube now, where YouTube has its own channel for each of the shows. So if you want Sentai, Sentai is its own show. What's Up Fandom Night is its own show. Pages is its own show. Legacy of Gaming is its own show. Jobber is its own show. Well, they're their own shows, but you know what I mean. They're their own channels off of YouTube. That's what I'm trying to get at, if I could think clearly. But anyway, so like I said, for anybody who wants to play catch-up without actually playing catch-up and watching all of the different shows, because Daredevil's on 2 seasons, Luke Cage is on a season, and Jessica Jones has her own season, so that's already 26 from, at least I think so, hold on, should be 26 from, oh goddamn touchpad, there we go. Oh no, it's 13 for season 1 of Daredevil. And then if we go into season 2, okay, just because I want to be on the safe side. Okay, so no, I'm wrong. Each one is fucking 13 episodes for each season. So that's already 26 for Daredevil, and then, sorry, finishing my cigarette, 39 if you include Jessica, and then when you go to Luke, it becomes 42, if I remember correctly. So that's 42 episodes at roughly an hour each. So, yeah, that's a hell of a lot. That's almost 2 days on its own. So, I mean, if you want to go ahead and, you know, fucking marathon everything, go feel free. But I'm figuring I could try to catch everybody up and try to drop any of the little hints and references for basically what's going to end up happening in both Luke Cage and, once they get around to it, Defenders, because that's basically what they're leading up to, is all of the, quote, D-list superheroes having their own series. And, of course, it also ties in with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but seeing as how I stopped watching that after season one, yeah, we're not going to go into that. We'll just do the Netflix seasons. But regardless, so we get into Daredevil season one. Now, episode one is entitled Into the Ring, where basically you get to learn a little bit about Matt Murdock and what he does and, you know, how he's Daredevil and that. And, you know, the fact that by day he's a lawyer and by night he's, you know, the man without fear, the Daredevil. So, if I remember correctly, there's not much to that, but there kind of is. Let's see. We'll jump over to episode two, which is called Cut Man. No, not like the Mega Man villain, but kind of. What is it? It says, Murdock makes a near-fatal error when trying to save a kidnapped boy and finds an unlikely ally when he needs saving himself. Basically, if I remember correctly, Murdock, even though he's been trained in martial arts, he still gets his ass whooped on occasion. You know, he takes beatings. Like, that's how he's learned to fight, is he gets his ass handed to him. He's not like every other superhero where they just instantly can do whatever the fuck they want, no questions asked. You know what I mean? He's not a Thor. He's not a Captain America. He's not a Batman. He's, you know what I mean? Like, he gets his ass whooped. But basically, he ends up getting a couple gashes. I want to say he gets shot. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But regardless, he ends up finding this girl named Claire, in which Claire ends up being very important. Why does Claire end up being very important? Well, that ties into Luke Cage. Claire is a, at the time, nurse in this show, because, of course, the continuities are fucked up. But in the original comic book continuity, Claire ends up being the first love interest of Luke Cage. In fact, her and Luke, I want to say they dated for quite a while. There were even hints of marriage and all that, but it never ended up happening. So, because it doesn't end up happening, it ends up going into, well, something else I'll discuss once we get there later. But basically, you know, Matt Murdock ends up meeting what is her last name? God damn it. Anyway, he ends up meeting Claire. And Claire ends up, you know, helping him out by stitching his ass up and, you know, anytime he runs into problems, making sure that she's there and available to help him out. You know, I mean, not so much with the crime fighting, but you know what I mean. Let's see, episode 3, A Rabbit in a Snowstorm. Matt Murdock and Foggy, so Foggy Nelson, who's Matt Murdock's law partner, they take on a mysterious wealthy client, but Murdock is convinced that there's more to this case than the facts. Basically, if I remember correctly, Murdock ends up helping this guy who doesn't really... What is it? I want to say, like, he did something, but he didn't do something, but at the same time, he's, like, a bad dude. Like, I want to say he works for Fisk, the Kingpin. And it's discovered that, you know, basically, that while this guy is helping Fisk... Sorry, needed another cigarette. I took a minute to actually try to read this so I could try to get my memory back, so excuse me. But yeah, basically this dude ends up working for, Wilson Fisk, aka the Kingpin. And Matt Murdock is basically set to, try to help the guy out, but some shit goes sideways and Daredevil has to step in to try to stop him from being an asshat. If I remember correctly, this should be about the time that they end up meeting, No, that should have been within, like, the first episode. They end up meeting, I can't think of her name, but she ends up being the girl who basically ends up being the receptionist, which in several of the comics, if I remember correctly, the receptionist girl, I can't think of her name right now, but she ends up getting addicted to drugs, and because she ends up getting addicted to drugs, she ends up being the one who reveals who Daredevil is to the Kingpin. Because it was this big hullabaloo bullshit, and yeah, anyway. Episode 4, Into the Blood. Two vicious Russian brothers working for Fisk strike back against Daredevil.
Fisk moves to further consolidate his powers in the criminal underworld. If I remember correctly, this is episode 4 is one of the first episodes where you start to meet all the different players in Hell's Kitchen. Like, it's not just Fisk. Fisk is referred to as the Kingpin because, as a businessman, he goes out of his way to try to make sure that basically everybody's on about the same page in the underworld. It's not just him and his, you know, mafia thugs, but at the same time, he tries to make sure that the Yakuza has a cut, the Chinese mafia has a cut, with the heroin and slave trade. You know, he tries to make sure that not only does the Italians, which is his, but the Russian mob, like basically any mafioso type, you know, anybody running any form of like gangland type of shit, they're all working under the same umbrella for the same thing. Like, he basically lays out, okay, look, here's the areas where you guys can run. You know, anything on the in-between is my turf. So, you know, you guys get this area, you guys get that area, and you guys get this area. I'll give, like, 2 blocks in between of everybody. Those 2 blocks are mine. That way, then, you know, we'll make sure that everybody's safe. I'll try to run protection for you guys. You know, anything that, you know, you guys need help with, you know, cleaning, you know, money, so money laundering, you know, any thugs for hire, anything like that, you know, you guys need help running a protection racketeer, anything like that, you give me, you know, give me a call, and I'll give you a hand if there's any troubles. Excuse me. So, like I said, basically, Kingpin's running around and, you know, throwing his weight around. But like I said, it's the first time you get to see all the heads of state, in quotes. Episode 5, A World on Fire. Fisk moves forward with plans that threaten to rip Hell's Kitchen apart. Murdoch and Foggy end up taking on a case, helping tenants victimized by a slumlord. Now, this is a fairly important episode in the grand scheme of all of it. Because the reason why everybody's attempting to take over this building comes down to a matter of basically the Hand, which I'm not going to give that away, but the Hand is starting to, show its hand. And I know that's kind of spoilers for the episode, but that's kind of the reason why I'm here. Is they're trying to take over this building because it was supposed to have been given to, oh God, why can't I think of her name right now? It's Madam something, but it was supposed to have been given to her, which is part of the, she runs basically like the Chinese mafia, in quotes, because I can't think of their actual name. Kind of like the Yakuza is the Japanese mafia. But anyway, she was supposed to have inherited all these buildings in this area, in the slum. And the apartment building, there's something in the basement, if I remember correctly. And they're supposed to be going through and digging down to get to this thing that they really, really need, which is supposed to be some sort of, like, chamber containing mystical energies, end quote, that will allow the Hand to become better ninjas. Episode 6 is called Condemned. Daredevil finds himself trapped in the fallout of Fisk's plan to take control of Hell's Kitchen. Ben Urich digs closer to the truth. Now, Ben Urich is a, he's a journalist who basically, he's one of those guys, like he's one of the last few guys who actually don't like fluff pieces. He likes going out and, you know, trying to dig for hard facts and uncovering shit like that. And he ends up helping the receptionist chick who's trying to dig deeper and figure out who Fisk is, because it's, you know, kind of hard for people to tell, oddly enough, but, you know, because Fisk is an actual businessman. But she's trying to, you know, dig for facts on him, figure out if he has mafia connections, you know, if he's the one running all this, you know, racketeering bullshit, and if she's the one who sent an assassin to her apartment to try to kill her. Because that's basically what happens in the first episode, and that's why her and Daredevil end up being friendly, in quotes. Episode 7 is entitled Stick. An important figure of Matt Murdock's past reemerges seeking his help to battle a new enemy threatening Hell's Kitchen. Basically, Episode 7 is when the Hand finally literally reveals themselves. And Stick, for anybody who doesn't know, is a fellow blind man who is well-versed in martial arts. He's the one who found Maddie. He's the one who basically took him under his wing and taught him how to fight. Stick has, which this is spoilers for later episodes, but Stick has basically, he's changed multiple times throughout the comic books. You'd have to ask Bill. He would know better than I would, even though I have a laptop sitting in front of me and I can easily look up the wiki page, which most of you guys could do as well. But Stick's changed multiple times throughout the course of the comic book history, but it's always been the same thing. Stick was a blind man who basically taught Matt Murdock how to fight. Now, in this version, Stick is basically, he's kind of one of those guys who takes no prisoners. You could chalk it up to old age, you could chalk it up to he already knew what was coming. Like, he was told a long time ago exactly what was coming in the Hand. And basically, Stick likes to, like I said, take no prisoners. Anytime you get into a fight, it's a fight to the death. No one is to live. The only person who gets to walk away is the one who wins the fight, which is the person who lives. Episode 8, Shadows in the Glass. While Matt Murdock and Foggy and Karen, that's the receptionist's Karen, but while Murdock, Foggy, and Karen's mission becomes clear, Fisk World spins out further out of control. If I can goddamn read. But anyway, Fisk's world spins further out of control in his battle for Hell's Kitchen. Because, of course, the Daredevil is there stepping in and interfering and kicking people's asses whenever they need kicked. So, fairly straightforward. Sadly, I don't remember much from that episode, so something tells me there was a few hints and references in there, like deep Easter eggs that I probably missed myself, but as far as I know, I can't really tell you much about that episode. Episode 9 is, fuck me, it would help if I were to not be in the season listing. Okay, season 1, scroll all the fucking way back down, because I'm an idiot. Episode 9, Speak of the Devil. When Fisk gains the upper hand, the goal to destroy him becomes even more difficult, while Daredevil faces his own demons. Basically, by this point, Matt has been drinking heavily, and a good portion of that comes from the fact of the law firm, while it's taking on a bunch of clients and cases, can't really afford the office space that they have right now. In fact, most of the clientele that they've been picking up, Matt's hand-selected because of his altered hearing and the fact that he has a radar sense, he can basically tell if you're lying or not. So a good portion of the clientele that's been coming into the offices looking for help with, you know, anything from a parking ticket to, you know, hey, the mafia's after me, Matt's basically been picking up anybody he knows is actually an innocent person. So it's kind of being more of a pain in the ass towards Foggy, because really Foggy's in it for the money, unfortunately. But mostly so that way then they can try to pay Karen, they can keep up the rent on their office space, and basically just have money to live off of. But seeing as how the clientele's basically paying in bananas, oranges, you know, homemade cookies and apple pies, all they're really doing is basically making enough money to eat. Or, well, basically, they're surviving. They have food to eat. That's about it. Cable bill can't pay it. Electric bill can't pay it. Heating bill can't pay it. Gas bill can't pay it. Water bill can't pay it. Garbage bill can't pay it. Rent, barely paying it. You know what I mean? So they have food. That's about it. But if I remember correctly, I want to say it should be sometime in this episode or sometime in the next episode, they end up killing the Yakuza master, who's basically in charge of the Hand, in which the hand ends up reverting over to the Chinese mafia lady. And again, I can't think of her name right now. Once again, it's Madam something, and it's pissing me off that I can't think of her fucking name. But anyway, we move on to episode 10, Nelson versus Murdoch, where Matt and Foggy, their relationship is put to the ultimate test while a new enemy against Fisk emerges. So basically, while Fisk's enterprise, in quotes, is falling apart, and the madam chick, the Chinese mafioso, she's basically telling Fisk that she wants out. She's done dealing with him. She's going to take care of her own shit because everything Fisk has been doing has been being taken down easily by the Daredevil. But because of Matt's drinking, him and Foggy are getting into all sorts of, you know, damn near fist fights. Like, they're having shouting matches and shoving competitions at times. And basically, Matt's world is starting to fall apart. Which, unfortunately, is one of those things that just kind of happens to most of these superheroes. Episode number 11, The Path of the Righteous. Fisk and Murdoch wrestle with consequences of their chosen paths, while Ben and Karen get closer to Fisk's true past. Basically, they've been trying to dig into Wilson Fisk, both Karen and Ben, and they've been trying to figure out, like, what made him become the Kingpin. Because, of course, by now, they've figured out that Wilson Fisk is the Kingpin. So they're trying to figure out what it is that drove him to the point where he started killing people simply to try to kill people, type of thing, you know, like, where if he can't throw his weight and money around, you know, he ends up trying to basically beat the living shit out of somebody. Because for anybody who remembers the Daredevil movie, yeah, 90% of that was horseshit. Unless you watch the director's cut, and then only 50% of it is horseshit. But let's see. Episode 12, The Ones We Leave Behind. Fisk seeks revenge while Karen is haunted by recent events. Daredevil makes a startling discovery about Fisk's financing. So basically, if I remember correctly, Matt realizes almost too late that because he's the Kingpin, a good portion of the shit that Matt's been like fighting for and, you know, trying to help, and a portion of the money that's been coming in from him comes basically from the Kingpin of Crime. So he's kind of freaking out about that shit. Like, what the fuck? Why should I even be dealing with this guy? At the same time, he also tries to, if I remember correctly, I can't remember if it's him or if it's Karen and Ben. But I know in episode 11, they figure out that Wilson Fisk, the reason why he started killing, is because his dad was basically trying to become like a mob boss. Well, he was trying to use the mafia to basically run for mayor. That's another reason why Fisk is, you know, trying to do what he does. He's trying to build up Hell's Kitchen by basically violent means. He figures if he's able to control both the good and the bad side of the city, he could try to either minimize or eliminate the crime in the city from the inside out, while, you know, trying to make sure that the city basically ends up becoming everything that his father ever wanted it to be. But because his dad was a dirtbag dickwad who was beating on his mom, Fisk basically beat the shit out of his dad and killed him, in which his mom helped him hide the body. So when we get to 12, you know, Fisk is all sorts of freaking out because by this point he's got himself a steady girlfriend. She knows what he does. She knows he's a mafioso type. But at the same time, she doesn't give a shit. Because, you know, it's the old phrase, you can't control who you fall in love with or some shit like that. But again, Matt's figured out, you know, basically what all's going on and what drives him. Sorry, I'm chain smoking like a motherfucker tonight. It's been a long night. Work was a pain in the ass, but anyway. So Matt's kind of, you know, being like, well, what the fuck type of shit, and basically trying to come after Fisk. episode 13, Daredevil. In the season finale, a boxed-in Fisk and a desperate Murdoch, Foggy, and Karen are forced to play their end games. Basically, what ends up happening is Foggy ends up quitting the practice and leaving to take an offer given to him by the big competing company, where his ex-girlfriend slash now-girlfriend, because they're on-again, off-again type of thing. But anyway, the two of them get back together, she offers him up a job where she works at, and they're like, oh, all right, well, you know, whatever. So he basically ends up leaving, so that way then he can go take the other position. Karen basically ends up leaving to go work and take over for Ben, because Ben's retiring slash being fired from the newspaper. So Karen's taking up a position at the newspaper. Oh, no, wait, that's not it. Not quite yet. But basically, because they're shutting down the practice, she's leaving anyway. And then Matt and Daredevil, since they are the same guy, basically work Fisk to a point where Fisk tries to run away, gets caught by the FBI. So they basically, you know, they tell the feds, hey, look, a good portion of his shit is criminal activity. Here's the evidence. Go fucking get him. So they catch him. Fisk ends up trying to flee custody, and Murdoch ends up beating the shit out of him in an alleyway and leaving him damn near for dead. He's alive, but damn near for dead. And then the cops finally catch up and, you know, throw his ass in jail. But then we're going to move on to Daredevil Season 2. Technically speaking, Jessica Drew comes next, but seeing as how Jessica doesn't really tie in quite yet, we'll go through all of Daredevil. Episode 1 of Season 2 is called Bang. In the void left by Fisk's removal, a new threat to Hell's Kitchen emerges. Murdoch and Foggy take on a client with a questionable past. Oh, wait, that's right, they haven't split up yet. But Foggy basically is like, we're about to be done. So I want to say this is like one of the last cases they work at together. But yeah, so they end up taking on a client and trying to get some shit done. No, that's right, they don't split up the practice for a while. They end up getting lucky and they're barely able to keep the practice together. That's right. It's not till the gas end of Season 2. Anyway. Again, I told you my memory's a little foggy. Haha, Foggy Nelson. Anyway. Episode 1, I don't really remember that much of. I mean, obviously from the fact that I'm getting shit confused. But, anyway. Let's see. Episode 2, Dogs to a Gunfight. As Murdoch recovers from an attack, oh yeah, that's right, Matt gets his ass beat. Foggy and Karen fight to protect their new client from both the law and the kitchen's newest vigilante. That's right, the guy that they end up grabbing ends up being some sort of low-life scumbag. And Matt figures out he's been lying to him and gets pissed and goes and, like, tries to beat the shit out of the guy, but doesn't realize that there's, like, a hit on his head from the hand, so the hand show up. And Matt's all sorts of confused because the hand is being way more hardcore than they really need to be. But we'll get to that here in a minute or two. But anyway, so yeah, Dogs to the Gunfight. Yeah, they're trying to keep Daredevil away from everybody and trying to lock his ass up because they don't know that it's Matt. So They're trying to stop him, but then he ends up getting killed anyway. And come to find out that the new guy is actually the Punisher. So because they're trying to deal with the Punisher now, it just kind of becomes a giant hunk of shit, basically. Let's see, episode 3, New York's Finest. Trapped face-to-face with the Punisher, Daredevil wrestles with the morality of vigilante justice. Meanwhile, Foggy and Karen work to save the firm. So, oh yeah, that's right, because this is about the time that they're starting to go under. Because this is when Foggy ends up getting the job offer to go work for the other people, and he's like, nah, fuck on that. But seeing as how they can't pay bills, the clientele's been scarce, Matt's been showing up to work drunk and, you know, cuts and scrapes and shit all over his hands and arms and everything from fighting thugs and hand ninjas and shit, in which somewhere by now, I want to say it should have been like near the ass end of season two. I want to say it should have been about the finale. Matt found a guy who was working for Fisk to basically build them body armor. And he basically kind of blackmails the guy into helping him instead of Fisk, saying that he could take his ass down, which of course he does. But he's got this guy who's basically been making all of his shit for him. So reinforcing the billy clubs, reinforcing his suit, because Matt was basically running around in like a pirate costume in quotes, because for anybody who knows, Daredevil used to be referred to as the swashbuckler, the man without fear, the Daredevil, because it was some sort of a fucking gimmick. Like, he wasn't really a pirate or anything. I think it was a part of the way that the costume looked, which basically the costume looked almost the same as it does today, only it was yellow and black, which, considering the fact that Daredevil was blind, was kind of ridiculous. It wasn't until Frank Miller took over, in which it became the red leather, which almost everybody knows him for, because he was like, everybody knows Miller's very particular about the heroes he works on. He kind of comes in and he starts throwing away everything that's just absolutely god-awful and stupid, which, thank God for Frank Miller and the comic book universe. But anyway, so, like I said, Daredevil's kind of wrestling with, you know, the whole fact of, okay, well, you know, there's a difference between being a vigilante by, you know, beating people up and giving them to the cops, or doing what Punisher does, which is taking his Marine training, because if I remember correctly, Frank Castle was a Marine. Yeah, yeah, he was, although I say he was a Marine as if you ever stop being a Marine. Once you're in the military, you're always in the military, whether you're discharged or not. But basically, he's been using his training and the cache of weapons he's got his hands on to basically shoot and kill criminals, which is part of the problem that Daredevil's been having is, you know, do we really need to kill people? Well, technically, Punisher goes, yeah, yeah, we do. What's the point of putting a motherfucker in prison when they're just going to get right back out and go back to, you know, murdering and raping? You know, he's like, you know, selling drugs is one thing. Go ahead and lock those motherfuckers up. But if you want to get to the true heart of corruption in this city, you need to take out everyone who's, you know, a violent offender. Anybody who goes up and rapes women. Anybody who murders family in the park in the middle of the day just because they can. You know, they can walk up with a 9mm and shoot a wife, kid, and a dad right in the head in the middle of Central Park. The cops will pick them up and they'll be out within 24 hours on, you know, like half a mil for bail. It's like, these people just need to be put down. So they end up slightly coming to blows, but not really, because, you know, Matt's about to break out of the chains. Because he's tied up literally in chains. He's chained to a chimney, if I remember correctly, on top of a building. And a night security guard comes up because, of course, the alarm was tripped. And Castle feeds the guy a bunch of horseshit of, oh, yeah, I'm from out, you know, I'm live out of town. I'm here visiting my sister and her kids. And I just felt like coming up for a cigarette break because I didn't want to smoke around the kids. And the security guard's like, yeah, visiting family's a tough deal. Just, you know, make sure that, you know, you don't set off the alarm when you go back in, and make sure that, you know, you keep the door closed and locked when you come back. And he's like, all right, I will. I'm sorry, guy. So Matt's literally almost freed from his chains, and he's like, okay, so you're not going to kill the random security guard, mostly because you're playing a game with me where, you know, if I keep quiet and, you know, don't alert him that I'm up here, you know, you'll let the guy live. But he realizes he wasn't going to kill him any fucking way. He's only out to kill villains. So that's where the, basically the wrestling with morality thing comes into play. And then of course there's a giant fist fight with a bunch of thugs, in which Punisher ends up getting knocked the fuck out, and Daredevil basically has to fight all the way down the stairs. In which the way they do the cuts is ingenious, because it looks like it's literally one long fight scene, but it's not. They do, the way that they do the cinematography in this is, they basically, anytime they pan over a wall or anytime they go into a dark area, the stairwell, that's where they end up doing a cut. So that way then everybody can take a break and, you know, go back over the fight choreography and, you know, catch their breath, grab a cigarette or a drink or whatever they need and get ready to go again. So it's actually a pretty fucking damn good scene. So if you're going to watch any of these episodes for a fight scene, definitely the ass end of episode 3 is one worth watching. Episode 4, Penny and Dime. Karen uncovers shocking facts about the Punisher, who finds himself hunted by a powerful force in Hell's Kitchen. Daredevil ponders his next moves. Basically, Karen figures out that Frank Castle was in the military. He ended up saving a bunch of people's lives. He almost could have been a recipient for, like, the Silver Star for bravery under pressure in the military. But some shit ends up going sideways, and when he gets back, his entire family ends up being killed. Because, well, that's just Punisher's backstory. His entire family ends up being killed because he... The Punisher movie's a bunch of horseshit. He wasn't working for the CIA, but he basically, he ratted on some people in the mob. Like, I want to say it was just like a random day and he saw some shady shit and told some cops about it, and the cops got the feds involved, and then the feds ended up taking him down. So his entire family ends up being killed for it, but in this show we end up finding out that's not the case, which I'll get to that episode once we get to that episode. Episode 5 is called, and I'm probably going to butcher the shit out of this, because if I remember correctly, it's supposed to be Japanese, but it's, Kinbaku. Let's see. A former lover arrives in Hell's Kitchen and turns Murdoch's world upside down. Karen digs for truth about the Punisher. Basically, Elektra shows up. And anybody who knows, Matt Murdock and Elektra, they're a hardcore couple. I mean, don't get me wrong. If you read the books, you realize that Murdoch ends up getting with Black Widow, and the reason being is because while Black Widow is technically speaking hardcore in love with Steve Rogers, she can't be with Cappy because Cappy's too much of a Boy Scout. While Cappy will complete the mission, Murdoch will complete the mission by any means necessary, which is more Black Widow speed. Any means necessary. If somebody has to die in order for you to move on and complete the objective, then unfortunately somebody has to die. You know, when it comes right down to it, they are the perfect hitman type of couple. Which is kind of funny I mentioned hitman, because when you think about it, technically that's the role in the game of hitman, is you're supposed to kill the targets and anybody else leave them the fuck alone. But usually when you're playing that game, anybody gets in your way, fuck them, they die. But regardless, Elektra shows up, they end up doing a bunch of stupid shit, they end up reliving the past a bit, where Elektra ends up breaking into a house, and come to find out she breaks into the house because the guy has been, like, molesting children and shit, and she's gonna end up killing him, in which Matt ends up, I can't remember if Matt looks the other way, but it's like, you and me are done, or if it ends up being a matter of, he ends up just letting her kill her, and then he's like, or kill the guy. Yeah. He lets her kill the dude. Either way, if I remember correctly, she kills the guy. But, yeah, it ends up being a big old hullabaloo where basically she's like, well, I'm out. And he's like, fine, whatever, don't give a fuck. But when they meet back up and they're trying to relive the past and everything, I want to say they end up breaking into somebody's penthouse apartment where the hand ends up showing up, so they have to fight off a bunch of ninjas and shit. So, another good one for fights. Episode 6, Regrets Only. A lethal foe returns with a vengeance. Foggy and Murdoch risk the firm to ensure justice, and Karen sees a different side of the Punisher. Basically, because Punisher got his ass beat in episode 4, or no, at the ass end of episode 3, he ends up being caught and put in, like, a hospital where he's, you know, surrounded by cops at all points in time. And Karen goes in to interview him because basically they're going to end up trying to defend him and all the shit he's been doing. So they kind of agree to it, but then at the same time they got to deal with some shit. I can't remember who it is that ends up showing up. I know it's not Kingpin. Oh, that's right. No, it's the fucking ninja that they end up killing. The leader of the Yakuza, who also is supposed to be in charge of the Hand. Because you come to find out that all the Hand ninjas have basically, they've all died, but they have a process to reincarnate them. You don't figure that out for a couple more episodes, so spoilers. But again, I'm spoiling all these, so what the fuck. Moving along, episode 7 is Semper Fidelis. Murdoch and Foggy take on the DA in the Trial of the Century, basically defending Castle. But their client refuses to play along. Meanwhile, Murdoch struggles to balance his dual identities. So basically, Matt's having troubles going out and helping Elektra because Elektra's constantly coming to Matt for help with fighting the Hand. And then at the same time, he's also trying to prepare the case and everything to try to help save, you know, Frank. Because Frank's about to go to jail for a very, 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 very long time for all the murders and shit that he's done. You know, so they go out of their way to try to find character witnesses and shit to try to help save his ass. And meanwhile, Matt's having troubles with, you know, trying to work on the case and stay focused while he's getting his ass beat, staying up until, you know, 5 a.m., going out with Elektra to try to hunt down and stop the Hand from doing, well, Hand shit. Especially seeing as how, if I remember correctly, they're supposed to be getting, the Hand is supposed to be getting a shipment in a cargo container, in which the shipment in the cargo container ends up being this kid, in which the kid is necessary in order to revive people, basically. Episode 8 is Guilty as Sin. As the firm's trial spins out of control, a figure from Murdoch's past returns to deliver shocking revelations about the future of Hell's Kitchen. Basically, all hell's breaking loose in the trial. If I remember correctly, Frank ends up standing up and being like, I did it, and I'd do it again. Fuck all them people. Fuck them all in the ass. And everybody's like, what the fuck? Which we'll get to the reason why here in a little bit. But basically, Stick shows up and says that he handpicked Elektra to basically not only be Matt's girlfriend at the time and possible future wife. So everything that she knew about Matt and everything was all just a fucking ruse, so that way then he'd fall in love with her any fucking way. So that way then Stick would know that he would have the perfect couple to take down the Hand and be able to actually, I don't know, breed and make children who would be able to fight the Hand. So he was basically trying to ensure that generations of people will be able to take down the Hand anytime that they try to show up. Let's see, episode 9, 7 Minutes in Heaven. Castle gets an offer he can't refuse, which is why he freaks the fuck out in court. Foggy and Murdoch question the future of their firm, but Karen won't give up so easily. So basically, this is about the time Foggy's like, yeah, I'm done with this shit. If you're not actually going to show up and, you know, help me win cases and do all the shit that you're supposed to be doing as a lawyer, then what the fuck good are you? And Karen doesn't want that shit to happen because she knows that they're all good friends and everything and that they need to stick together. Mostly because she's also infatuated with Frank. And not from a standpoint of, like, she loves Frank and wants to be with him and anything like that. Like, she's just figured out his family was murdered. That's the reason he does the shit he does. You know, if there was ever a more noble reason, it would kind of be revenge for your family. You know what I mean? Just simply because. By this point, if I remember correctly, Stick has basically taught Matt how to listen, because hand ninjas have learned how to basically make their hearts stop beating. Like, it's either they beat so fast that you can't hear them, or they beat so slowly and still keep them alive that you can't hear heartbeats, because that's how Matt usually fights, is he hears a person's heartbeat. But because they still have to breathe, he basically teaches Matt how to focus on the breathing. So that way then he can continue to fight the hand and not get his ass whooped. Episode 10, The Man in the Box. Murdock and Foggy get caught in the crossfire of the Punisher's revenge. Karen and Murdock dig for the truth in very different ways. Basically, if I remember correctly, Karen ends up going to the house. Well, she's already been to his house, but she ends up going back to Castle's house and figures out what the fuck ended up happening to him, to the family in the first fucking place. She ends up going and talking to his CO, or commanding officer, for those of you who don't know, but talks to his CO, who was there as a character witness at the trial, which, by the way, they end up getting the actor who ends up being, what is it? He ends up being, like, the lead guy, like, the head guard from Shawshank Redemption. So anybody who's seen that movie, it's the same dude, the same guy who voices Mr. Krabs and SpongeBob. Because that dude just has the look of being a hard ass, so I say it was a good fucking choice in actors there. But they end up going there and come to find out, like, the dude never lost his hand overseas. It was all a bunch of horseshit. And he's the one who killed Frank's family because Frank had discovered the the gun smuggling operation and all that shit that he was pulling. Yeah, because that's what it was in this universe. It was his CO was running guns and shit. But Karen ends up figuring it out and ends up confronting him about it, and almost gets killed. But Frank ends up coming to her rescue and ends up saving him. Saving her, anyway. And then, what is it? Murdock and Foggy caught in the crossfire of Punisher's revenge. I can't remember this one. Oh, no, I do remember. They end up tracking all the shipments to a boat in the pier. Because that's why Karen's off checking with the CO, is because she's figured out that the CO is the one who, you know, was originally doing all the, you know, illegal dog shit. But Frank and Matt still think it's, you know, the guy on the boat who ends up basically killing himself, if I remember correctly. 308, which, of course, for anybody who knows, is sniper rifle ammunition. The Punisher's war continues, and so does the body count in Hell's Kitchen. Murdock tries to finish what the DA started. Because they end up catching the guy, he ends up going to jail. Because Frank ends up going to prison. But he goes to prison because he basically, the reason why he freaked out in court so he could go to prison is he figured out that one of the guys who killed his family is there. And they basically set it up where he was going to be able to get revenge by killing the guy in prison. And then Frank ends up breaking out and going to the boat, like I said, and tracking the other guy down, and he's about to kill him when Matt stops him. And this is basically a continuation of the last episode, because Frank escapes barely, Matt escapes barely, and then what is it? Oh, yeah, then Frank goes and tries to help save Karen type of thing. Episode 12, The Dark at the End of the Tunnel. Daredevil goes underground to save an old friend because Elektra's been kidnapped. Karen follows a dangerous lead. Okay, I was wrong. This is where she goes and confronts the CO. The new law firm of Nelson and Murdock may have reached its final chapter. This is where Foggy basically goes, yeah, I'm going to go take up with the hardcore law firm that my on-again, off-again ex basically works for. So he goes there to work, thus leaving Nelson and Murdock is no more as a law firm. because Matt's more worried about Elektra and trying to save her. And then, like I said, Karen goes to deal with the CEO and almost gets herself killed. Episode 13, A Cold Day in Hell's Kitchen, which is the season finale. Daredevil is back into the ultimate showdown for his own life and the future of Hell's Kitchen. If I remember correctly, him and Elektra end up beating the shit out of the Hand. Elektra ends up getting killed, as she always does. She gets thrown in a vat by the Hand so she can be reincarnated. Frank saves Karen, ends up finding the cache of weapons out in the woods, where he also finds a flak jacket that just so happens to have his symbol on it. Coincidence much. And then Matt basically tells Karen that he is Daredevil, which kind of breaks up that whole relationship because she wants to be, what is it, like Karen wants to be with Matt, but she doesn't want to be with the devil because she thinks that the Daredevil is wrong. But because she's been trying to help Frank, who's a vigilante, she's kind of torn. And if I remember correctly, they end up being together. I can't remember if they end up getting together or not. Like I said, it's been a minute since I've watched that one. I don't know. I'd have to rewatch that one. Or you guys can watch it for me and tell me how much of a jackass I am. But that's basically all of Daredevil. So then we move into Jessica Jones, because this is the order I watched them all in. But we move into Jessica, and it starts off with episode 1, which my Netflix is being goddamn retarded. Let me guess, my Wi-Fi died, didn't it? No, it says there's a connection. Okay, what the fuck? Let's close Netflix and retry. But basically, you figure out that Jessica's been freelancing, trying to basically be a private investigator, because that's Jessica's job, is she's a PI. She helps get dirt for the big law firm that Foggy's been working at. You find out that the chick who ends up running that is a lesbian, which, good job, Marvel. Being owned by Disney and still being like, nah, fuck on that, we're still going to show same-sex shit. Oh, there it is. Episode 1, a.k.a. Ladies' Night. Jessica Jones is hired to find a pretty NYU student who's vanished, but it turns out to be more than a simple missing persons case. Basically, Jessica runs her shit out of her apartment, where she basically lives. She's been following around Luke Cage and basically spying on him. And you think it's just to dig up dirt on Cage, like he's, you know, some, I don't want to say dirtbag, but that's basically what you assume, is that he's another dirtbag. But seeing as how he's Luke Cage, and everybody knows who Luke Cage is, especially by now, you know what I mean? Which, basically what ends up happening there is, okay, we'll get into that further on in other episodes. But yeah, basically it's, you know, the setup to Jessica. You kind of learn about her and what she's been through and all that shit. And you, I'm trying to think of what happens with the case. I want to say she ends up finding the girl, but come to find out the girl has actually been, hypnotized by, this guy who, hypnotized Jessica a long-ass time ago, along with Luke's dead wife. Kilgrave is, of course, the guy who hypnotized him, but, because technically speaking, Kilgrave is a mutant, but they can't call him a mutant because of the Fox bullshit, so. Anyway. Yeah, she ends up finding Hope, who's the student that vanished. And then Hope's parents end up taking her to the elevator, in which case Hope ends up shooting her parents. Episode 2 is called AKA Crush Syndrome. Jessica vows to prove Hope's innocence, even though it means tracking down a terrifying figure from her past. Basically, Jessica's trying to figure out where Kilgrave is, because she knows he's the only person who can do that shit. Just literally say something and you just do it. You know what I mean? That's Kilgrave's power. is he basically has a mind control where as long as he said something to you within like 24 hours, you have to do what he says. At the same time, you also, within this one or the last episode, you end up meeting three of Jessica's neighbors. One of them is a guy addicted to drugs. The other two are a couple of siblings who bicker like a married couple. In fact, you would almost assume that they're married. And, yeah. Yeah, it's a bad time for her and her neighbors, but, yeah. You end up learning a bunch of shit about her and the neighbors, and they set all the characters and everything up, and again, Jessica goes out trying to find Kilgrave while at the same time also talking to the chick at the law firm. I can't think of her name right now. Let's see. Episode 3, a.k.a. It's Called Whiskey. It won't be easy to acquire or deploy, but Jessica thinks she's found a weapon to use against Kilgrave. Luke and Jessica bond over their similarities. Basically, Jessica's figured out that Luke Cage has unbreakable skin and is super strong, which Jessica, I don't think, has unbreakable skin, but she has super strength. Like, they end up shacking up at one point, if I remember correctly, because, spoiler alert, Jessica and Luke end up being married. In the comic books, Luke and Jessica get married, and they end up having a daughter. I can't remember the daughter's name right now, but the daughter ends up becoming the next Power Man. Because that's what Luke was referred to as in prison. Well, in the show, that's what he was referred to in prison is Power Man. But basically, Luke Cage started out as Power Man, dropped that facade after him and Danny started up Heroes for Hire, and then just kind of became Luke Cage after a while, because he was like, yeah, this Power Man thing's really fucking stupid. Like, why go out of my way to get a costume when really all I need is just a pair of clothes, seeing as how I have bulletproof skin? Which, technically, his skin in the comic books isn't bulletproof. Adamantium is the one thing that can actually stop him, but seeing as how X-Men owns the rights to adamantium, so Fox owns the rights to adamantium, technically speaking, Marvel can't do that, which is kind of the reason why they set up all this, quote, alien metal in the first Avengers movie when all the aliens show up. Technically, the metal that they're using is adamantium, but since they can't use that term, well. And also because vibranium is actually stronger than adamantium in the comic book universe, technically speaking, vibranium could penetrate Luke Cage's skin, but once again, seeing as how we're not going off comic book logic for most of these shows, the, quote, alien metal, which is stronger than every metal on the face of the planet, bullshit, as we saw from, the first Avengers movie. But anyway, yeah, so Luke and Jessica end up hooking up. She realizes Luke is super strong, just like she is. And all sorts of hell ends up breaking loose, because you come to find out that Jessica is the reason why Luke's wife is dead. So they kind of end up coming to blows of sorts. Like, they kind of get into a giant argument. I don't believe they start throwing fists, but yeah, all sorts of hell just kind of breaks loose, and they're like, yeah, yeah, we're done with this shit. Episode 4, a.k.a. 99 Friends. A new case demands attention as Jessica tries to find out who's spying on her for Kilgrave. Trish's radio show yields unexpected consequences. Ah, yes, that's correct. So, Trish is She was a child star who ends up being Jessica's adopted sister, because Jessica's entire family died in a car wreck. The same car wreck that made Jessica's mutation end up taking form. They try to say, once again, like Matt Murdock, it was a bunch of chemicals were spilled, and the chemicals ended up causing her to gain superpowers. Which is a load of horseshit. Jessica, much like Luke, they're mutants. So, there we go. But again, we can't say the term mutant because Fox copyright bullshit. But yeah, so she was basically taken in because Patsy's mom, or no, not Patsy, sorry, Trish's mom, because I want to say it's Patsy Walker, but I know I'm fucking wrong. I want to say it's, her name is actually Trish Walker. But anyway, Trish and Jessica are, like, fairly close because Jessica basically told her mom to go fuck herself because her mom, being the manager of her own daughter, was basically doing it. You kind of got to think of, like, Dance Moms and stupid shows like that where they show off the fact that these mothers are, you know, going out of their way to whore out their children because the parents seek attention. The children don't, but the parents do. So because the parents seek attention, they're basically forcing their daughters to do all sorts of stupid shit just so they can get some sort of recognition out of it. And it's a bunch of horseshit. But yeah, Trish basically, she stopped doing the whole acting thing and started doing like a public radio show type of thing where she kind of gives her own political views and shit like that. So yeah, Trish, I want to say, ends up commenting on all of it, and Kilgrave ends up calling into the show. Let's see, episode 5, a.k.a. The Sandwich Saved Me. Despite Jessica's obsessions, Trish's new friend Simpson gets involved in the hunt for Kilgrave. Jessica recalls a pivotal moment in her life, which, of course, was when Kilgrave ends up causing her to kill Luke Cage's wife, which you end up realizing that the reason why all that was is because Luke Cage's wife knew where something was buried inside one of the bus stations, and Kilgrave wanted it. I can't remember if it was money or blueprints or it was basically some sort of shit where Kilgrave could almost be untouchable, where if something happened and his powers didn't work, he could still basically have all of the government officials in his back pocket type of thing. If I remember correctly, oh yeah, Simpson is the cop who was sent to kill Trish. You come to find out that Simpson used to be in the military and is actually a villain called, like, the Patriot or something like that. But you don't know that until later on when some shit goes down. But basically, yeah, if I remember correctly, Malcolm, who ends up being the drug-addicted neighbor of Jessica, is the one who's been spying on her. So they try to use basically anybody who's been under Kilgrave's power. Because if I remember correctly, once he relinquishes control, or no, once you find a way to relinquish Kilgrave's control, he can never control you again. So because they figured out that Malcolm was under control and Jessica found a way to keep him away from the control, and Simpson, the cop, since he's no longer under Kilgrave's control, they try to use him as well. So, yeah. Episode 6, a.k.a. You're the Winner, or You're a Winner. Luke hires Jessica to help him find someone who may have skipped town, but she fears he'll learn too much about her history in the process. So she's basically still kind of lying to Luke, but still trying to turn up the charm because she feels bad for what had happened. But at the same time, because Luke's a cute guy, in quotes, she's still trying to get with him. At the same time, Hogarth, that's the fucking chick. Because I'm looking at a couple episodes further, but yeah. Hogarth is the chick who runs the law firm that Jessica consults for. So there's a whole bunch of shit with her, because apparently she's having an affair with the secretary at work. Meanwhile, her wife, who's a doctor, is sitting at home doing all sorts of shit. So, you know, wondering, well, what the fuck's wrong with her and why she's never home and shit like that. Just, you know, typical dysfunctional couple. Episode 7, a.k.a. Top Shelf Preserves. And I'm trying to move along because I realize I'm at an hour, so you already could have watched one of these episodes by now. And I still have half of this season, well, half of this series from Jessica Jones to go through. And then I still have to get to Luke Cage. So anyway, Top Shelf,
Top shelf perverts.
There it is. Malcolm, Simpson, and Trish go rogue to prevent Jessica from carrying out an extreme plan to outwit Kilgrave. If I remember correctly, it doesn't work. I want to say she still ends up outsmarting Kilgrave and ends up getting into a, basically a soundproof room where nobody can hear him, because as long as you can't hear him or make visual line of sight with him, he doesn't actually have the power to control you, in quotes. Because later on we'll find out that that's a bunch of horseshit. Episode 8, a.k.a. WWJD. So instead of what would Jesus do, what would Jessica do? Because that's actually asked in either the last episode or this episode. Jessica experiences a strange homecoming courtesy of Kilgrave. Hogarth's conflict with her estranged wife reaches a tipping point. Basically, Hogarth is filing for divorce from her wife so she can be with the secretary who she's been fucking around with on the side. Excuse me. And then Kilgrave ends up taking Jessica because Kilgrave basically gets out of the prison. If I remember correctly, I think I'm wrong, but he cons Jessica into going back to her childhood home, saying he'll stop controlling everybody else and just be with her. He'll stop controlling other people so long as she'll agree to be with him and just be there willingly. Like, he doesn't want to use any of his powers on her. He just wants her to be with her willingly. Because, of course, Kilgrave has, like, a hardcore massive crush on her. Episode 9, a.k.a. Sinbin. Just as Jessica has Kilgrave where she wants him, Hogarth's involvement complicates the situation. Details of Kilgrave's past emerges. Ah, that's right. Okay. So in episode 7, that's when she knocks him out and gets him into the soundproof room. Meanwhile, she gets Hogarth, her, quote, boss, to show up to try to basically set up Kilgrave to, like, go to jail for the shit with Hope killing her parents and stuff like that. But then they find out that the reason why Kilgrave has his abilities is because his parents ended up experimenting on him, which is what ended up giving him his abilities and everything. But Hogarth ends up releasing Kilgrave, trying to use her to, Hogarth is trying to use Kilgrave to get her soon-to-be ex-wife to stop from trying to, like, take half, basically. Like, they didn't sign a prenup. So because they didn't sign the prenup, Hogarth's soon-to-be ex is basically trying to sue her for all of the money because there was infidelity involved, which, even if they had a prenup, infidelity still negates it. So you can't just be like, oh, yeah, well, what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours and we're going to, you know, split ways and fuck on you. If you're caught basically, what's the word I'm looking for? If you end up committing adultery, that's what I'm looking for. If you end up committing adultery, technically speaking, you can spend, it's either 10 years in prison or like a $50,000 fine for infidelity in your marriage. So, yeah, she basically lets Kilgrave out so that way then Kilgrave could try to convince her ex-wife to stop. You know, like, just kill herself, stop, you know, just settle with, you know, a small divorce, take what you got and fucking leave and never talk to her again. But some shit ends up going down and the ex-wife ends up tripping and falling on a rug and bashing her head against a fucking glass coffee table. Which, seeing as how it's a pointed glass coffee table, dead instantly. Meanwhile, Kilgrave gets the fuck away. Episode 10, a.k.a. A Thousand Cuts. A discovery has the potential to change the entire game if Jessica can refuse Kilgrave's offer. Don't really remember that much from it, but we're going to keep moving on. That's right. By about this time, fucking Simpson's already been to the hospital. His former CO shows up and basically starts giving him the pills again. Which, the pills are some shit that they, quote, okay. The way that it goes in the storyline is that in the military, they give you a set of pills. They give you, like, a blue pill to help you sleep, a red pill when you need to kill people, which is basically, like, a hardcore version of, like, coke, crack, speed, and heroin, if I remember correctly. Like, it's like a shit ton of uppers. Like, it's a bunch of, like, caffeine, cocaine, and, like, a bunch of other shit all rolled into one, which basically makes you, like, a violent psychopath. And then, of course, a white one, once you're done killing everybody, to, you know, calm the fuck down. So, basically, they give you an upper when you need to kill people. They give you a downer to help you calm the fuck down. And then they give you, like, basically, like, a blue, like, tranquilizer to help you sleep at night. And basically forget all the horrendous shit you did. Well, Simpson's been doing nothing but taking the red pills, which is causing him to go psychotic. So, yeah, in episode 11, a.k.a. I've Got the Blues, Jessica searches the morgues for clues. Trish goes all out to keep Simpson from getting in Jessica's way, and Malcolm has an epiphany. Basically, Malcolm realizes what the fuck Kilgrave is up to, where he's at, or where he could be hiding at, and shit like that, because he remembers all the shit that he was doing when Kilgrave had him under his control and had him spying on Jessica for him. So he realizes that Kilgrave likes to hang out in the park and wait for, you know, basically dead drops of Jessica's photos and shit. Simpson, who's been going ape shit, basically ended up slapping Trish around a little bit. And even though he loves Trish, like hardcore loves Trish, Trish doesn't want shit to do with him because of it. But, of course, Simpson's just ready to fucking get in there and whip ass. If I remember correctly, Trish has been taking lessons from a guy and learning martial arts. She's actually been learning from Danny, if I remember correctly. So she's learning from Danny, a.k.a. the Iron Fist, all sorts of martial arts and shit, namely Shaolin, if I remember correctly. Because it's supposed to be a joke. Iron Fist is actually supposed to be Bruce Lee. But, of course, because when Stan Lee wrote the comic book, it was still in the 70s where racism and bigotry were happening. So even though he couldn't, you know, full out make him, you know, an Asian man doing karate and whipping ass, you know, with superpowers, he basically made it a white dude who, you know, learned basically Dragon Fist is supposed to be the Iron Fist ability. But yeah, she's learning martial arts and shit from him. She's built up a panic room. She's learning how to defend herself because Jessica's problems keep seeping in. But, yeah, Simpson basically tries to get in and some shit goes down. And Jessica ends up going to a bunch of morgues because Kilgrave's back to killing people. So she's going there trying to look to figure out what the fuck is going on. Episode 12, a.k.a. Take a Bloody Number. The hunt for Kilgrave reunites Jessica with Luke. Trish receives some unexpected information about Simpson and Jessica. So, basically, Trish figures out that Simpson was in the military and was taking nothing but the red pills lately, which is making him a hardcore psychopath worse than 10,000 pounds of bull semen pumped straight into your ass, a.k.a. nothing but pure testosterone. And Jessica teams up with Luke to try to take down Kilgrave, which she doesn't realize Luke has been under Kilgrave's power. Jessica ends up stopping Luke by taking a shotgun, putting it in Luke's face, and pulling the trigger. Luckily, all it does is knocks him unconscious, in which she ends up taking Luke to a local hospital, where, guess who just so happens to be working there? Claire. So, as the nurse in the ER is trying to put a IV into his arm, the needles keep bending. To which, Claire tries putting a needle in his arm, and it won't work. And she tries putting another one in, and it won't work. To which she realizes she has to put the IV into his eyeball, because that's the only soft tissue on his body, is through his tear ducts to try to get an IV drip in him. because he's burning up with a fever because he's been knocked out. And then episode 13, so the finale, a.k.a. Smile. Jessica and Luke get help from someone in the neighborhood, or someone else in the neighborhood. Kilgrave gears up for a major test of his powers against Jessica because Kilgrave found a serum which will not only make his hypnosis last more than an hour, but at the same time, it will also basically make it go to a point where he can control more than one person. He uses this to basically get all of the police in Grand Central Station to basically help him try to take down Jessica, in which Kilgrave has since then also kidnapped Trish and is using Trish as some sort of bait to try to get Jessica out. In which case, Jessica ends up getting there, stops the cops, gets up to Kilgrave, pretends to be under his power, walks up to Kilgrave, and ends up killing Kilgrave in order to free everybody from his mind control. That is basically all of Jessica Jones. Now for the last one, and oh boy, this one might be at about an hour 40 by the time we're done, because it's looking like we're at almost an hour 15, roughly? Yeah, anyway. So, episode 1, Moment of Truth. With tension building in the streets of Harlem, thanks to a ruthless club owner named Cottonmouth, Luke finds it increasingly difficult to live a quiet life. Luke is basically, after, you know, because, what is it, he got his powers. If I remember correctly, Luke is supposed to come kind of in the middle of Jessica type of thing. But anyway, so Luke ends up working at a barbershop for a guy named Pops. Now, everybody in Harlem knows Pops. Everybody in Harlem goes to Pops for haircuts. Gangsters, mob bosses, politicians, everybody. You know, he's basically, he's like, what is it? They claim it like he's Switzerland. You know what I mean? Anybody who comes into Pops' shop knows whatever business you have, any beefs you got with anybody, all of it falls apart. It stays at the door. You're coming in to get a shave and a haircut, and that's fucking it. You got any problems, any beefs, any troubles? Fucking leave them at the door. You're done. Well, somebody ends up shooting up Pops's... No, not yet. Never mind. Hold up. Pops basically tells Luke, look, you know, you could take getting shot. You know, you can help people. You're super strong. Why are you even here? Go do what everybody else is doing, like, you know, that guy who's cleaning up Hell's Kitchen, referring to the devil. So Luke ends up deciding, all right, I'm going to try to help and, you know, clean up the city a bit. Episode 2, Code of the Streets. Luke is pulled deeper into the fight for his neighborhood when, as a favor for an old friend, he tries to help a kid who's in trouble with Cottonmouth. If I remember correctly, the kid ends up working for Cottonmouth, but he's been skimming money off the top of Cottonmouth's stuff, in which Cottonmouth ends up owning a nightclub. So the music in this, fucking, if you're one of those people who loves music during, like, fight scenes in a movie, this entire show is good, you know, on good standings for that. Like, the soundtrack to Luke Cage is fucking phenomenal when it comes right down to it. But basically, Cottonmouth shows up at Pops, trying to look for the kid. Luke is helping the kid. There's a guy named Shades who shows up either at the start of this episode or near the ass end of episode 1. Shades, you'll come to find out later on, ends up getting with Cottonmouth's sister, in which Cottonmouth's sister has been running for... She either is mayor of Harlem or she's... I want to say she is and she's running for re-election. But she basically knows all the shady shit that her brother's been up to. But Shades and her end up hooking up because, what is it, their kid ends up being, like, the next power man, if I remember correctly. Like, he ends up being the second power man in the comics. So they're setting all that shit up, too. Because Luke and Jessica's daughter ends up being power woman. Because she ends up gaining both mommy and daddy's abilities. I think she has the unbreakable skin and the super strength,
But Shades and I can't remember the sister's name, but anyway, Shades' kid ends up getting the super strength, if I remember correctly, and that's it. Like, he doesn't have the bulletproof skin, but he makes up for it with the fact of being, you know, a smart street thug type of guy who just wants to do the right thing, because he realizes that Daddy's been trying to turn him into, like, some sort of unstoppable villain, and he's like, no, fuck on that. I'm done doing your dirty work and shit. But that's major spoilers for, you know, the ass end, which at least then I don't, won't have to cover that. Episode 3, Who's Gonna Take the Weight? In the aftermath of a chaotic event at a favorite Harlem hangout, meaning Pops's gets shot up in episode 2 and Pops ends up dead, Luke heeds the call to action and hits Cottonmouth where he'll feel it most. So basically, Luke starts taking out all of Cottonmouth's dudes and trying to, like, stop everything that's been, that Cottonmouth's been working on, all the shady underground shit. Episode 4, Step in the Arena. As he rescues a victim of Cottonmouth's vengeance, Luke remembers his earlier life and the conspiracy that led to his superhuman strength. Basically, this is an entire episode about Luke's backstory, even more so than it was in, like, episode 1 or the couple times he showed up in Jessica Jones. There it is. I knew I had a cough coming. Basically, you kind of go through the whole thing where Luke ended up being a prisoner on, like, a bogus-ass charge, if I remember correctly. And that's where he ends up meeting his wife. His wife ends up being basically an orderly for one of the doctors who's there doing psychological evals. Excuse me. Needed a drink. Throat's starting to get dry from all this fucking talking and smoking. But yeah, so he ends up meeting his wife there. Luke has a giant fucking poofy ass afro because he hasn't been to the doctor. Because he hasn't been to the barber, I mean, excuse me. And a big-ass beard, because, of course, he's just completely unkept while he's in prison. He also doesn't have his powers at this point. He has no superhuman strength or, you know, invulnerability. But, what is it, like, he ends up getting the hots for the one chick who realizes that, well, his wife... but he ends up getting the hots for her. She realizes he's not a bad dude, doesn't know why he's in the prison, basically cons the warden into letting him be a part of the underground fight circuit that's been going on inside the prison, and he basically works his way up to being the champ, in which anytime you work your way up to being the champ, then you end up getting your ass handed to you by somebody even stronger than you. On purpose. Like, they purposely go out of their way to try to kill you and beat you to death. So that way then they can put you in a testing chamber to try to recreate the super soldier process that basically made Captain America. So they put him in a vat of, like, superheated liquid, which the superheated liquid ends up causing his skin to boil. But because there's, like, some sort of, like, a healing factor, in quotes, serum in there, while the skin is boiling, it's basically boiling off all the dead skin cells and causing new skin cells to regrow, in which the new skin cells are basically, quote, bulletproof. That's what gives him his resilience. At the same time, the fact that Luke's skin is harder also makes him hit like a fucking truck. But he ends up breaking out, swimming his way to shore, in which everybody just assumes he's dead because he made it to shore. He ends up finding a pair of clothes, which ends up being the original Power Man outfit, because he's got the big poofy afro, he's got this thing around his head, which kind of looks like a tiara. He has cufflinks on his arms, which looks like his power gauntlets. He puts on, like, a yellow V-neck open fucking woman shirt, and, like, a pair of bell-bottom jeans, because that's when he was made, was in, like, the 60s, if I remember correctly. That's when his story was written. So he finds some old woman who basically still lives in the 60s and puts on the outfit, and he's like, man, this costume looks like shit. which at the time it looked rad. But when you move him into the modern age, yeah, that costume looks fucking horrendous. So they make a joke about that. But meanwhile, while he's reliving that shit, there's also two detectives who are trying to figure out what Cottonmouth's up to, in which, I can't remember if it's this episode or the next episode, you figure out that basically one of the cops that's looking into Cottonmouth's bullshit is actually a dirty cop who's been taking bribes from Cottonmouth to basically stay off everybody's back for his entire syndicate. Episode 5, just to get a rep. Cottonmouth strikes back at Luke by taking his vengeance out on the people of Harlem, while Detectives Knight and Scarf, in which Scarf is the one who's the fucking crooked cop, face an unexpected threat, which is, of course, Scarf. Detective Knight, if I remember correctly, ends up, like, she ends up being another woman trying to get with Luke. Because Luke's basically like a hardcore playboy. Like, there's a bunch of chicks he ends up trying to get with in this and all the other shows. I can't remember too much about this episode other than, like I said, Cottonmouth starts hitting the streets and having his people try to basically blow up Harlem. And Luke's, you know, trying to stop all of it. Let's see, episode 6, Suckers Need Bodyguards. After Cottonmouth and Scarf's bloody clash, Luke realizes that saving the community may turn former allies into enemies and enemies into allies. Basically, if I remember correctly, Luke ends up meeting back up with Claire, who has since then been fired from the hospital after she has a freak out because they find one of the hand ninjas in Daredevil, who's already dead. They go to perform an autopsy on it, and Claire freaks the fuck out, like, what the fuck, what is this hospital trying to fucking cover up? And they're like, you know what, you could just be fired. And she's like, you can't fire me because I quit. I'm not about to put up with your shit. So she's been living with her mom, working at a diner, in which Luke ends up stumbling in and meeting her in one of the other episodes. But, because Cottonmouth and Scarf are basically fighting, Scarf ends up, like, turning to Luke, if I remember correctly, which doesn't end up helping him. I think he still ends up dead. But there's a whole bunch of shit going down. That's, if I remember correctly, that's actually one of the few good episodes, so it really sucks that I can't remember what the fuck happened. Manifest. Mariah, which is the sister, her political career comes under fire because they basically tell everybody that Cottonmouth is a thug-ass gangster, and Cottonmouth picks up information that could put Luke on the run. Basically, if I remember correctly, this is about the time that Diamondback shows up, in which we'll get to Diamondback here in a little bit, but Diamondback shows up, and he basically tells Cottonmouth exactly who Luke is. Luke isn't his real name. I can't remember Luke Cage's real name. It's Luke Cage is basically an alias that him and the wife came up with while he's still out on the run and everything. And basically, Cottonmouth figures that shit out and goes to Luke and he's like, look, dude, either I could turn you into the cops or you can leave me the fuck alone. But there's a whole bunch of shit going on with Mariah, the sister. So we'll leave that at that. Because basically she's coming under fire because fucking Cottonmouth is, you know, running around like a crazed maniac blowing up everybody. Which, speaking of blowing up, episode 8, Blowing Up the Spot. Mariah campaigns to turn the city and the police against Luke, and not even Misty or Claire may be able to save him. So basically they're trying to turn it on Luke and be like, yeah, Luke's the reason why the hood's being shot up, you know. He's the one doing all the killing, you know, my brother's basically been trying to save everybody, which is all a bunch of horse shit. And I can't remember if it's the end of episode 7 or the end of episode 8, but Mariah ends up going crazy and ends up beating the shit out of Cottonmouth and ends up killing him. Which is why her and Shades end up start, you know, talking and hooking up and shit. Because Shades is basically trying to get her to, take over the family business because she's, you know,
a hell of a lot smarter and better than fucking Cottonmouth ever was. Cottonmouth is basically just a dumb street thug, whereas fucking she knows exactly what the ins and out of business are. So he's trying to groom her to be like the next queenpin of New York City. Episode 9, DWYCK. I can't remember what that acronym actually stands for, but anyway. With Luke wounded and on the run, Misty faces a soul-searching interrogation. Mariah's rise to power takes a dark turn. Oh no, it's at the end of this episode is when she kills Cottonmouth. The end of episode 8, Diamondback ends up shooting Luke with a, explosive round made from the, quote, alien metal from all of the, havoc and shit from, when the Avengers hit New York City, which is, again, the only thing that can pierce Luke's skin. And then, of course, because the bullet explodes, it basically fragments into his body and keeps getting closer and closer to major organs. So they end up having to leave and try to find the doctor who originally created the experiment so they could try to go in and surgically remove everything from out of Luke. Which, again, if they could just get their hands on some vibranium instruments, they might be able to work on Luke, but seeing as how they're not a part of the Avengers yet, because technically the Defenders work for the Avengers, so we'll get there. Episode 10, Take It Personal. Luke gets closer to the truth about Reva and her part in his fate, while Mariah wrestles with the morality of her new role and Misty hunts for Luke. So Misty starts hunting for Luke because she's buying into the bullshit, even though she knows it's bullshit. It's technically an order from up high. Mariah, since she's killed Cottonmouth and is now taking his spot, is trying to, you know, deal with the fact of she's about to become, you know, the new queenpin of Harlem. And while Luke and Claire are off fixing up Luke, they find the original hard drive, which they kind of figure out that basically Reva set Luke up in the first place to get his ass beat so he could be a part of the Super Soldier program, because Reva, much like the original doctor who created fucking Captain America, realized if you take somebody who has nothing and give them everything, they'll actually take more responsibility for it than taking somebody who has everything and giving them more. You know what I mean? They'll appreciate what they have more if you come from nothing and, you know, are given all sorts of shit. Whereas if you already have everything and then you're given even more, you're just going to squander it. Which is something that, basically, it's one of those morality tales where it's something we could all learn from. Episode 11, Now You're Mine. In one bold move, a friend from his past puts Luke on the defensive. Misty in dire straits and Harlem safety in jeopardy. Basically, the, quote, friend is actually Luke's half-brother. Because Luke's father, even though he was a reverend, was a horny reverend who was fucking the secretary at the church. And basically, that's why him and Luke have been best friends and brothers for forever, is because they actually are brothers. They actually stop off at the church where, Luke's dad used to preach at, where Luke realizes exactly what the fuck was going on. Like, because he was a little kid, like 4 or 5, he had memories of it, he just couldn't piece it together. But since he went back after realizing all the shit he's been through, the memories started flooding back to him and he was like, oh shit, we actually are brothers. But because of Diamondback's bullshit, like I said, Misty's in dire straits because, you know, she's being hunted by Diamondback now because Diamondback assumes that, you know, she's the one person who can find Luke. And in the meantime, Diamondback's going nuts, blowing up almost all of Harlem, trying to help Shades and fucking Mariah get all their shit together so that way then they could be, you know, the new rulers of Harlem, in quotes. Episode 12, Soliloquy of Chaos. Misty digs deeper for the truth as the neighborhood's power players throw the city into confusion.
Basically, there's a whole bunch of shit going on. Misty's trying to figure out what the shit is actually going on. And Mariah, Shades, and Diamondback are, of course, throwing their weight around. Meanwhile, Luke has since come back and is now out to try to take everybody down. Which leads to episode 13, You Know My Steez. With all of Harlem bearing witness, Luke takes on the fight of his life in hopes of emerging as the defender his city needs. Once again, Misty and Shades end up leaving the town at the end of the episode because all hell breaks loose. And, of course, since this is a superhero thing, Luke saves the day. You know, there's a whole bunch of bullshit that goes down in between where you're like, will he, won't he type of thing. And they actually do a very convincing job of setting the atmosphere where it pulls you in to a point where you're like, oh, shit. But basically, Luke ends up getting the diamond back. Stops him. I can't remember if he throws him in jail or kills him, but he basically stops Diamondback. Shades ends up grabbing Mariah, and he's like, we need to get the fuck out of here. You're too good for this. We'll have another chance. Let's go. So they dip out because Shades was basically double-crossed at this by this point. I want to say it was by episode 11 he was double-crossed. So he's ready to take revenge against, you know, all the syndicates and everything, so he's another anti-hero. Well, by this point, he's another anti-hero, because he's just out for his own personal vendetta. What is it? Claire and Misty end up finally meeting each other, and they kind of have, like, just a debate, but they're both, like, kind of in a battle to figure out who's going to shack up with Luke and be with him, even though, technically speaking, Luke and Jessica end up getting together, and they're the ones that get married and have the kid and everything, because Luke's an upstanding guy. Like, he is and he isn't. Like, he's still a dude, but at the end of the day, his, you know, morals are more upstanding than everybody else's. And then at the same time, Misty ends up walking by a post on a telephone pole, basically by Danny, saying, anybody interested in martial arts, call this number. So Misty goes off to train in martial arts because she realizes all sorts of shit's about to break loose. So now we have all the main players, and you guys know exactly what the fuck is going on. Detective Misty Knight, who's about to become, if I remember correctly, like a liaison to the Defenders for S.H.I.E.L.D. You have, you have, Trish, Jessica's, adopted sister, who's training in martial arts so she could try to help or at least provide backup whenever she can. Luke Cage, the man with the impenetrable skin. Jessica Jones, who's a detective slash hard hitter. Daredevil, the man without fear. Elektra, when she gets back, which is probably going to be a bunch of horse shit on its own because Elektra's going to be brainwashed by then and working for the Hand, in which Matt's going to end up having to, you know, knock some sense into her, make her realize that she's doing the wrong shit. Which, Elektra's also been running around in a ninja outfit, so hopefully by the next time we see Elektra, she'll actually be in her bandana and red dress. And then, well, you guys can figure out what's going on with me on Friday once everything ends up dropping for Iron Fist. However, seeing as how I did all that talking and it's now currently 10:45 at night, I need to go to bed because I got to be up and to work by 2:30. So hopefully the insights and some of the Easter eggs will show you what the fuck is about to happen. Not only for Iron Fist, who him and Luke are going to team up to become the heroes for hire. So something tells me Luke might be making some special guest appearances in Iron Fist. Claire will probably be there because, of course, Claire and Luke are supposed to become a couple before him and Jessica get together. Like, they were kind of hinting at it in Luke Cage, but I don't think they actually did anything. I mean, don't quote me on that. They might have. I want to say they shacked up a couple of times, but I'm not 100%, so don't quote me. And, yeah, something tells me, oh no, that's right, fucking Claire does show up.
because she's in the trailer. That's the word I'm thinking of. So yeah, she's in the trailer for Iron Fist. So Claire will be there. Claire is going to be one of the few things that ties Daredevil, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist together. Jessica already knows Luke, so that's how they're all going to team up for Defenders. And basically, Iron Fist is going to be the last setup for everything before we get into Defenders for Netflix, which hopefully should be dropping sometime around October. Don't quote me on that, but hopefully, fingers crossed, it'll be by the ass end of this year, if not around this time next year. But any questions, comments, concerns, you guys know where to go. You go to thefandomnight.com and you hit up the email. Or you can go to Facebook and look up the group page, in which case then you can call me out on my bullshit. But like I said, hopefully you guys are excited for Iron Fist as I am, especially seeing as how in Marvel Puzzle Quest, which here's a cheap plug for him, but in Marvel Puzzle Quest, Iron Fist is one of the main guys I roll with. Usually through every mission, as long as I can keep him on the team, it's usually Iron Fist, Hulk, and Bullseye. But not the Bullseye that you guys know as Clint Barton. No, instead it's, it's Bullseye, but it's not Bullseye that you know from Daredevil, the guy who, you know, has a hardcore vendetta grudge against, you know, Daredevil for making him miss. Instead, it's Bullseye from, Hammer, who he's a villain, but because, Norman Osborn ended up, because he's, quote, reformed, but because Norman ended up taking over S.H.I.E.L.D., because S.H.I.E.L.D. was basically called in for its bullshit, he ends up giving Bullseye adamantium skin, so that way then he can revel with Luke Cage and the ability to deflect everything, and he's also wearing Hawkeye's costume, the old purple costume. Which, seeing as how we haven't seen Clint in the purple costume, something tells me movie-wise, if they try to pull that shit off where Norman Osborn ends up taking over S.H.I.E.L.D. HQ, aka Tony's apartment, if they end up trying to pull that story out of their ass, something tells me we might see Bullseye in that costume. But seeing as how we still have to get to a season 3 of Daredevil as well, my elbow has been bothering me all day, so the fact that it popped is fucking amazing. But, anyway. Yeah, no, seeing as how we still have to get through a third season of Daredevil, if not resolve all the Elektra shit with, the Defenders, who fucking knows? We may be seeing Bullseye sooner than we think. But who fucking knows? That's just my opinion. And seeing as how we're sitting at an hour and 40-some-odd minutes, almost an hour 50, yeah, I'm going to stop babbling for a while. That's two episodes of Daredevil, Jessica Jones, or Luke Cage you guys could have watched. But I just summed up all three fucking shows, all four fucking seasons, in almost 2 hours. So, like I said, if you guys are as excited for Iron Fist as I am, hopefully that's the catch-up if you guys haven't been caught up. So, later on.
Hey guys, did you like that podcast? If so, remember to check out FandomNight.com. At FandomNight.com, you can drop a line to this show, or you could check out other podcasts as well. We cover all kinds of topics, everything from comic books, wrestling, movies, TV shows, video games, animes, mangas. It's outrageous. We seem to have a podcast for just about everything, and you have access to it just by going over to FandomNight.com. So check it out, guys. We're going to get out of here.